This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Mental health is a serious issue, but when it comes to the depiction of it in Hollywood, it's kind of taken two ways. Either it's glamorized, for example, like movies like American Psycho or The Accountant, or it's depicted in horror movies like Psycho, The Shining, and others as like villainous killers. Has Hollywood description of mental illness affected our view in society? Joining me to shed light on this is Chief Medical Officer from Skyland Trail, Raymond Katwicki. Thanks for joining me, Dr. Katwicki.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You know, you see it a lot in movies and TV shows, but it's kind of hard to grasp, my mind around it. Why is it that people with mental illnesses, like, why are they vilified in TVs and movies?
Well, you know, Mason, I think that when something horrific happens in society or the world, people look for ways to make sense out of something that really is nonsensical. And to that end, I think people with mental illnesses can sometimes be an easy target to say, this person or this group of people who did this really terrible, unthinkable thing, they are different from me as somebody who is a member of the public. And I think that there really is some important distance that can result from the idea that these people, and I use kind of air quotes when I say that, are responsible for the horrible things that happen in society, rather than believing that violence and bad things originate from members of the general public who are just like anybody else.
But it's not just the vilifying. Also, it's kind of like superhero powers, which is so weird. I was watching The Accountant, and it has Ben Affleck, and his character has autism. And he's like this, he's an accountant, and he does all this superhero stuff. And it's like, because he's autistic. You know, that's kind of like, where does that come from?
Well, you know, I think people with mental illnesses have a lot of attributes. And if you think about, getting through a day when you're depressed and you feel sad and you don't like to do things and you have a problem with your energy and other signs and symptoms of depression, it's remarkable to me that somebody who experiences those things can actually make it through the day and be functional. And so sometimes in the media, almost like when people with mental illnesses are vilified, it is something that movie makers and TV shows like to look at people with mental illnesses as being extraordinary and almost having superpowers, when in fact I think that's a real unidimensional view of a person with a mental illness. So, you know, my suggestion is to look at somebody who has a mental illness in the media in a very holistic way, that there are people who have tremendous attributes, but those are the same people who also might be experiencing signs and symptoms of a mental illness that aren't so great. And by portraying a person in that entirety, I think it is a very responsible way to portray mental illness in the media.
Do you think that media should be more conscientious of how they portray mental illnesses? Because I think of like 13 Reasons Why, and I think that's, that actually increased Google research about how to kill yourself. So do you think they should be like, hey, you should be more responsible with the stuff that you bring out?
Yeah, I really wish that the media were more responsible. And in part, it's because I think that we want people who are dealing with mental illnesses to be able to say, I really could use some help. And so if the media were to portray people as complicated human beings who have struggles but also have positive things about it, and really, focusing also on how somebody with a mental illness fits into society in a very realistic way, so that people are neither all good nor all bad, might encourage people who are trying to figure out what's going on in their own personal lives, who might have a symptom of a mental illness, to identify with that and to believe that if they were to go get help in a place that provided respectful and evidence-based care, they could get better and live a productive and happy life. My concern with the current way that people are portrayed in the media who have mental illnesses is that it's really easy to say, oh, I'm not like that person. I don't boil my neighbor's bunny on the stove. Ergo, I'm not somebody who has a mental illness and needs to be able to get help. And from my point of view, that further perpetuates the stigma of what it means to have a mental illness. And we know that people with mental illnesses can get a lot better if they get treatment. And that's ultimately my goal, is to try to help people get treatment so that they can live happy and healthy lives.
Have you seen that there are more people willing to come in and see a psychiatrist or even a therapist? Or is it one of those you've noticed people have tried to self-medicate and have done a self-diagnosis before anything?
Yeah, I think it's a mixed bag. I think we're, starting to see some improvement in terms of people engaging with the mental health community and reaching out to get help from a psychiatrist. That was one of the, possibly untoward positive things that happened from 13 Reasons Why and other media portrayals of people who are suicidal, is that in addition to the negative piece of people looking on the internet to see how they might make a suicide attempt, there also is a group of people who are looking at suicide hotlines and engaging in treatment and proactive and helpful things, presumably because they need help and might be thinking of suicide. So I think, it's a bit of a double-edged sword. When the media talks about mental illness at all, for some people, that can encourage them to connect with the mental health community and get treatment. But the flip side is that if it's glamorized and made out to be something that people don't relate to but poke fun at or make fun of folks who do have mental illnesses, that can really put another barrier up to prevent people who need help from getting the help that they need.
Do you ever think that it's inappropriate when they kind of poke fun at mental illness, or is this something that, hey, at least it's in, it's kind of being lighthearted about it?
Yeah, I think, it's probably never appropriate to make fun of a group of people who have some kind of common thread. But I think there are examples, and we know that one of the most important factors for being resilient and getting through adversity when other people might not be able to do that is to have a good sense of humor. And I think that there are times when laughing at a situation rather than laughing at an individual could be really appropriate and really helpful. Just as an example of that, David O. Russell, who wrote and I believe directed Silver Linings Playbook, actually had a son who he was publicly commenting on, who had bipolar disorder. And because David actually personally experienced what it was like to be a father of somebody who was in that situation with that mental illness, I think that he did a relatively good job at sort of saying, yeah, sometimes this can, be silly. And I think one of the things that can be helpful to get through difficult situations is to laugh at things that seem to be kind of funny. But that's very different than laughing at a person or laughing at an illness or a pathology, which, again, in my opinion, further creates a stigma that suggests that person or those individuals in that group are different and broken compared to people who don't have a mental illness. And I think that that's an inappropriate use of humor, but there can be very, very eloquent ways to laugh at a situation in order to be able to get through it.
Another stigma that I find in movies and TVs, and usually you find this in the horror aspect, is treatment. One of it is shock therapy. And I think of it like, oh, I would never want to do that for myself. But is something like that ever helpful?
Oh, yeah. Shock therapy, or what we in psychiatry call ECT, which stands for electroconvulsive therapy, is actually one of the most helpful things to treat people with depression. Unfortunately, in the media and movies like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and other horrible films where people were subjected to ECT, oftentimes against their will, in those days, we didn't have general anesthesia. So when people were having ECT for their depression, they would, you know, thrash around and have a seizure without having anesthesia and break bones or chip their teeth or whatever. And the way that that was portrayed is obviously a barbaric sort of portrayal of ECT. In contemporary psychiatry, we use shock treatment when people don't respond to more traditional therapies like medications and psychotherapy, because we know that when somebody has treatment-resistant depression, it's a recipe for bad outcomes. Those are people who are at increased risk of dying from suicide, people with uncontrolled mood disorders like depression or even manic depression have many-fold increased risk of other medical problems like heart disease and diabetes and other things. And so when it goes for a while without somebody being able to get better through traditional treatments, ECT or shock therapy is actually one of the most efficacious and evidence-based ways to help somebody who's in a situation like that. So, you know, my hope would be that in a future TV show or a film or something like that, they might be able to share some stories of people who use ECT, whose lives have been dramatically improved and maybe even saved because of that treatment, whereas in the past it was something that I think really got really terrible public relations and negative press. And unfortunately, I think that that's prevented some people who really need treatment from getting something like ECT.
Another movie I was thinking of, too, was A Beautiful Mind. And I don't remember it very well, but from what I remember is that in the end, he was schizophrenic, and in the end, he didn't need his medicine anymore because he was so smart, he kind of willed himself back to sanity. When it comes down to the medicine portion, you know, a lot of people, because of movies and TVs, it's optional. Is that kind of true or no?
Well, it's portrayed as being optional, but I look at, you know, mental illnesses, and schizophrenia is a great example of sort of what we consider to be a serious persistent mental illness. So it really isn't true, unfortunately, Mason, that somebody with schizophrenia can get cured. It doesn't matter how smart somebody is. It doesn't matter, you know, what they do in terms of other treatments like physically exercising or, you know, surrounding themselves with positive relationships and good social support system. Illnesses like schizophrenia are lifelong illnesses, and they require treatment really for the rest of somebody's life. What can be really helpful, though, is when people get holistic care, and by that I mean, you know, thinking about doing talk therapy or psychotherapy, making sure that somebody's physical health is really an important piece of what people focus on every day. Those things can bolster the resilience and the strength of an individual who has a mental illness like schizophrenia, such that the amount of medicine that somebody takes may be able to be decreased, or they may be able to, you know, switch to a different class or a different kind of medication in order to be able to manage symptoms and signs of the illness, because they're doing these other things that help with recovery as well. But unfortunately, we really believe that a lot of mental illnesses are lifelong medical problems, and they're physiologically based. We're starting to better understand every day that it's not really just what's going on in somebody's brain that causes a mental illness. It really is a medical problem. So we know, you know, some people with mental illnesses have changes in their immune system, and some people with mental illnesses have issues regulating blood sugar and other things, and those are contributory reasons to why somebody develops a mental illness. So I look at it very much as I look at somebody who has diabetes. If you're somebody who has diabetes, you might need to check your blood sugars, and you might need to watch what you eat and take insulin or your medicine every day, and you can control your blood sugars and what happens with your diabetes, but it's something that unfortunately doesn't go away for a lot of people. And especially if you have, you know, insulin-dependent diabetes since you were born, that's kind of what you're going to have to work on managing for the rest of your life. And I look at mental illnesses, particularly schizophrenia, in a very same way.
A lot of people, I don't think, realize when something's wrong. Should you just talk with your general physician and tell him certain things, tell him or her certain things, like, hey, I'm not feeling well mentally, or this, this, and then the other? I mean, when do you know it's an appropriate time to go? Because you don't sometimes realize when you're in a depression. You don't realize when you're in a manic state, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the sort of important complexities of having a mental illness, is that for many people who are in the middle of an episode of being mentally ill, they lose the insight into understanding that things aren't going the way that they would like for them to go. And so I think in making a diagnosis of any mental illness, one of the deal breakers is disability. And by that I mean, in order to meet criteria for any mental illness, you have to be disabled from having the symptoms or the signs of a mental illness. And so when people start missing work because they feel too sad to get out of bed and get ready and go into the office in the morning, or when people stay home to drink alcohol rather than going out socially with their friends because they don't want to be seen drinking alcohol to that degree with their friends, those are disabilities. Those are things that cause a dysfunction in the ability for somebody to be happy and work and be in the community. And so I think when people start viewing that they're having disabilities and they're not meeting their role responsibilities, or they're socially isolating from other people, that would be probably the most important thing to let a physician or a healthcare provider know about, so that that person can then ask more questions about the symptoms of a mental illness and possibly make a diagnosis. You know, diagnosing mental illnesses can be really tricky. And if I can briefly just talk a little bit about how to diagnose schizophrenia, since we were on that topic, it might be kind of an example of what I mean. A Beautiful Mind, you know, when Russell Crowe was portraying John Nash, the symptoms that were in the movie were what we call the positive symptoms of schizophrenia. And they make for good TV shows and good movies. So his character was hearing things that other people couldn't hear, which we call auditory hallucinations. He believed he was getting special messages directed specifically toward him from magazines. And so he was cutting out these words from magazines and putting them up on the wall in his shed. And those are what we call the positive symptoms of schizophrenia. They're pretty obvious to a lot of people. And in this context, the word positive doesn't mean good. It means extra. It's easy to see that somebody's responding to voices when you can't hear it. But the more important symptoms of schizophrenia that weren't portrayed in A Beautiful Mind are what we call the negative symptoms of schizophrenia. It's what people are missing. So it's the lack of ability to form social relationships. It's the lack of ability to enjoy doing things. It's the lack of ability to show emotion through facial expressions or to initiate communications that are organized. And those things are insidious. They're hard to say, yeah, that person isn't, you know, as social as we would like for him or her to be. But those negative symptoms are really the more important things for somebody to be able to observe, to use in order to make a diagnosis of schizophrenia. So you really have to go to somebody who knows what they're doing to be able to tease apart those things to make a good diagnosis so that somebody can get treatment.
How long do you think that'll take? I mean, do you go, like, stick to one doctor, or do you kind of bounce around?
Well, you know, the primary care doctors for a lot of people in the community are kind of the point of contact initially. And quite frankly, a lot of, you know, family practice docs and a lot of internists do a really, really good job at screening for things like depression. So, you know, when I go into my general medicine doctor, I fill out a survey and they ask questions about my mood and whether or not I'm able to meet my requirements for, you know, the day's responsibilities and things like that, which are a great way to screen for depression. But there are certain people who need to have an expert diagnostician to be able to ask questions like about the negative symptoms of schizophrenia, because those things look like a lot of other problems. They can, you know, look like depression. They can look like a thyroid problem. They can look like other medical issues, like an infection or, you know, having some kind of virus or something like that. And so sometimes people who have signs and symptoms of mental illnesses that aren't the bread and butter things really need to go to a psychiatrist and see somebody who specializes in being able to tease apart those more subtle things to make a good diagnosis. And quite frankly, I say good in, good out, bad in, bad out. If you have a good diagnosis and people understand what your brain is like and what you might be dealing with, you really can get evidence-based treatment that's respectful, that is shown to be very helpful in research studies that can lead to really positive outcomes. And the contrapositive is true, too. If you are misdiagnosed or you're not, sort of viewed in a way that is evidence-based from somebody who doesn't do this for a living, you can really have bad outcomes, unfortunately, as well.
For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Well, I work at a place in Atlanta, Georgia, called Skyland Trail, and we're much different than some of the old psychiatric facilities that are portrayed in the media. We're respectful, we're beautiful, our campus is a very welcoming and kind of uplifting place. And we really focus on helping people feel like they're part of a community so that patients can help one another get better. And our website is www.skylandtrail.org. But there are lots of other resources. If somebody's in a crisis and they're thinking, you know, about making a suicide attempt, there are resources that are hotlines, like through the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, or AFSP. People can always go to their local emergency room. People who are from the LGBT community can call the Trevor hotline to get help if they're thinking about suicide. And, you know, hopefully we can prevent this huge public health emergency by connecting people who are feeling desperate, perhaps because they have a mental illness, with appropriate resources so that they can get help. They can hopefully get connected with a therapist or a psychiatrist or a treatment center like Skyland Trail, so that they know that their future really is positive if they get treatment, and that having a mental illness isn't funny, it's not a death sentence, but it's a medical problem, and just like if somebody had cancer or heart disease or anything else, you got to get treatment in order to get better. And I hope that there are resources available for everybody who is ready to get treatment for a mental illness or a substance use disorder that they can connect with.
Well, thank you so much, Ray, for coming on. I really appreciate you being here.
It's my pleasure, Mason, and thank you for talking about this really important issue.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.